Good afternoon, everyone. This is In the Crease Avalanche podcast, where we talk all things Colorado Avalanche and NHL breaking news related. It is Sunday, February 21st, 2021, and I am joined today by Greg Dowda. Big Hirsch, Mike Herschel, is not able to join us today as he is busy with some work-related stuff. But we are going to go ahead and dive in, and we will start with yesterday's game at Lake Tahoe, the outdoor series presented by Bridgestone for the Avalanche and Golden Knights game. And I believe today is being presented by Honda. Greg, you, myself, Mike, we had our chat window open. We were watching this game, and I have to say, the 1 p.m. start time, even though I get the scenery and everything was beautiful and everything, it seemed like it backfired big time on the NHL.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a risky run when you play these outdoor games. The sun is an absolute nightmare, especially on all the spots. You know, as you kind of saw, the spots that the paint, the logos, that type of stuff is a little bit darker. You know, so it can also happen to the face-off dots, around the circles, around the crease. You know, the sun will hit those areas, and the heat will just stay there, and it'll just turn that those spots into slush. And we saw it time and time again. You know, players, refs, everybody just catching edges and catching ruts and going down. And there was that great montage that they had showing, you know, Nathan almost falling, and then the ref falling, and Nathan going to help the ref, and then Mikko Rantanen falling behind him. It was like, oh my gosh.
It was everywhere out there. I mean, you saw it affect the game from breakaway opportunities. The Golden Knights had a couple opportunities, and player comes flying through the zone, and he just catches that divot in the ice right there around, you know, the center ice area, and just, you know, goes sprawling across the ground. And they had a really good chance at the end of the first period. The Knights did, and unfortunately, you know, fortunately for Avalanche fans and Avs players, you know, on the team, he caught one of those ruts and went down and just slid into the corner as the period expired. It was yep. Rough sledding, so to speak, for everybody out there, and it led to the game eventually getting postponed to midnight Eastern time, 10 p.m. here in the Mountain Standard time zone, and it led to some questions, you know. The NHL, yes, they wanted to keep up with their tradition of providing an outdoor game. They wanted to get back to the roots, is the way they presented it. They wanted to go back to pond type hockey, except we weren't on a pond, we weren't on a lake, we were next to the lake, which you know, Pierre Edouard Belmar was very disappointed in. That's for sure, and they showed that piece. During the game yesterday, you know, his disappointment that they weren't actually skating on Lake Tahoe. For what it's worth, what we did see of the scenery and everything, it was really great. Their pieces talking about Lake Tahoe and all its activities that it offers in the wintertime was nice to see. The game itself, I think once we got to the second and third periods with the ice in better condition and the temperatures a little bit lower, no sunshine, really played well. You know, unfortunately you lose the scenery aspect of it, but me as a fan, I'm more concerned about the product of hockey that's being played more than I am about the spectacular views, which for a goaltender's perspective were probably distracting and probably would have led to some higher goal scoring opportunities had that game continued during the afternoon.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And especially with the sun, I mean, that's such a big deal as a goalie. You know, you catch that glare just right, and you have no idea where the puck is. You know, if it's coming in on a shot, you can lose it very easily just by hitting a certain sun ray, and suddenly it's gone. You know, so it's very distracting as a goaltender, that's for sure. And yeah, obviously, kind of having that scenery, not having the quick moves and whatnot to kind of keep your attention towards what's happening on the ice. Oh yeah, you can absolutely get distracted by that scenery to kind of mess up some plays. So.
You absolutely saw the difference in the pace and tempo of the game between the first period and then the second and third periods. Like the first period, it was both teams, you know, trying to stay on their feet, stay steady, and just kind of throw the puck at the net, because the goaltenders were going to have a hard time seeing it. Philip Grubauer pregame was actually shown wearing some aviators underneath his mask while he was taking warm-up shots. And I'm not sure what Fleury did on the other side of it. But watching that first period, you go and you sit there and watch, especially the Sam Girard goal, and there were a couple other times that Devin Toews or somebody else threw it on net. And it looked like Marc-Andre Fleury, who's one of the greatest goaltenders of this generation, was having a difficult time locating that puck as the game was going on. His view from his end of the ice during that first period, he saw all the trees. He's got all those trees behind Grubauer's side of the ice, whereas Grubauer's looking out and he's got blue skies, the mountains, and the blue lake, you know, and the sun shining down overhead. It was difficult for both goaltenders, and it was weird to see there for a while that Fleury was having the more difficult time in locating the puck. You go to the second and third period, and you've got dark skies around you, so, you know, outside of the puck, you know, coming whizzing at you head high as a goaltender, matching with that black background of the night sky and everything, you were going to find that puck coming at you, and you were able to identify it just a little bit better. But with that change, the NHL announced the change to the Flyers Bruins game today, and I believe that's set for a 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time start. So they honestly had to change things, but that brings up the question, you know, what made this game different versus the other outdoor games? They've had over 30 other outdoor games, so what made the ice so difficult compared to those other games? Because they played other games out in the sun.
Sure.
I believe there's an LA game that they played outdoors in the sun, and a few other places. But the biggest question is, where are the refrigeration trucks this weekend? Yeah. I didn't see refrigeration trucks, which usually means that they're using a super large and super productive cooling system underneath that ice. I think they truly went as original as they possibly could for this this series.
Yeah, absolutely, and yeah, it's probably backfired. I mean, as we kind of saw, it did. But it's not the worst idea, and especially when you're at altitude, the ice can stay a lot cooler. It can stay a lot harder. But the issue truly was the sun, and that's something that. Yeah, while it's happened before, they kind of planned for that. And you can tell they didn't 100% plan for it on this one. And, you know, in regards to, like, the stadium series and whatnot, you had those surroundings that also kind of helped block the sun. You know, they typically weren't being played at noon. You know, they're being played a little bit later when the sun had just dipped enough to where it could kind of get behind, you know, one side of a stadium or something. And it shielded the ice a little bit better. So... yeah, aside from that game in I believe LA, they really haven't had to worry too much about just having those insane refrigeration systems keeping the ice cool like that. And so it probably was just a little bit of an oversight of, well, we're going to be at altitude, and you know, it's winter time. It's probably not going to be super sunny. And you know, to be honest, it kind of caught me off guard too. I mean, you know, we're dealing with snowstorms and big winter storms all across the country, and you know, just happens to be one spot that it's bright and sunny and 40 degrees.
Yeah, the state line between California and Nevada definitely said, we don't care what your winter weather storm issues are, we're gonna be bright and sunny. The reports I've read state that the NHL group that put this together, you know, before, like, pregame skates and during warm-ups, the first part of the warm-ups is pretty sunny, but then clouds started rolling in, so it looked like it was going to be overcast and cloudy, so they wouldn't have to worry about the sun as much. But those clouds didn't stick around very long, and, you know, the sun comes out, and you touched on it, you know. Being at altitude with Lake Tahoe and stuff like that, you would think, you know, cooler temperatures, it's going to stay nice and cool. It's the same as saying going up into Aspen or Vail here in Colorado. You know, you're up in the mountains, it's going to be super, super cold, and you're not going to have to worry as much about warmer weather being a factor, so you're going to bundle up a little bit more. The other issue with that is, even though it's only maybe a couple thousand feet, 3,000 feet, 4,000 feet, or upwards of 10,000 feet, depending on where you're playing and what your elevation level is, the heating ability of the sun and the rays does have an effect. And they learned, like we said, or like you said, Greg, they learned the hard way on that one. And the process of putting that ice together and everything else is meticulous. These people who do these take care of the playing ice and everything else, not just for these outdoor games, but across the NHL and every arena that has an ice rink in it, even amateur leagues and recreation leagues and stuff like that. These people take amazing care of these sheets of ice so that hockey players around the world can do what they love and compete. But that ice was just super, 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 super rough. You could see it when they were trying to do patch jobs here and there, and TV timeouts and stuff like that were running a little bit longer than what they should have. So definitely, definitely, definitely an issue. But the Habs ended up winning that game 3-2. It's their first win in their third outdoor game. The game against the Detroit Red Wings played at Coors Field back, I believe that was 2016. I think. Yeah. I think it's 2016, 2017, somewhere in there. That game, the alumni game was the highlight of that outdoor series. Myself and Big Hirsch went to that. I bought tickets that year as a season ticket member and then bought some rooftop tickets. So, I mean, rooftop was the best seat in the house for the stadium series game at Coors Field. Caught in snow, on the other hand, was probably the downside to that entire weekend. That game ended in a loss to the Detroit Red Wings. Last year, the Avalanche played outdoors at Air Force Academy in a game against the LA Kings, and it was a back and forth game, on a neutral type site. I know it was hosted here in Colorado down at Air Force Academy, but when it comes to these outdoor games, both teams get very limited access to the rink to practice and learn how the puck bounces off the boards, the glass, everything else. So it's pretty much like a neutral site game for both teams. And LA just happened to take advantage of it, but we also lost Philip Grubauer and Eric, or not Eric Cole, but Ian, yeah, Ian Cole in that game. And Pavel Francouz had to come in relief. And it's hard for a goaltender to warm up very quickly when it's, below 30 degrees outside, and you've immediately got to go into a game after sitting there for the better part of three periods of hockey. Abs ended up losing that game by a goal, and then they ended up winning this one by a goal. Game-winning goal went to Devin Toews last night on a just beautiful shot from the blue line. I think the highlight for us was actually getting to see the new reverse retro uniforms for the first time in action. The Quebec Nordiques logo with the Avalanche's current maroon color scheme surrounding most of it, the numbers on the back and shoulders highlighted by the Nordiques blue. I mean, this uniform, in my opinion, is probably one of the best reverse retro uniforms that Adidas put out this year.
Yeah, I 100% agree, and they are just absolutely stunning. I might be biased. I absolutely say they're the best. I mean, it's just such a beautiful design and just pulled off so perfectly. And I was talking to my best friend last night, talking about the jerseys, and we kind of agreed that they're almost kind of tied with Dallas's third jerseys, those black and
The
green,
black and
kind of
neons, yeah.
green. Yeah, and it was kind of like, man, just what a job to do, just pulling something like that off. I mean, I can't stand the stars, but kind of want one of those jerseys. And thankfully, the Avs have a jersey that tops that. It's so stunning, and especially on top of what they kind of did with their color scheme this year, going to the blue pants and blue gloves and blue helmet that. Yeah, I think we all kind of agree is it's a little rough on the ice sometimes. Having a jersey that's the opposite end of the spectrum that's just so beautiful just makes you feel better about it, you know.
Absolutely. And it brings up a question. You know, you were talking about the blue pants and blue gloves and everything that they wear with their home uniforms instead of the black that they've worn in the past. Last night, the maroon color scheme along the hem of the jerseys and everything went with a maroon set of pants, you know, socks, gloves, helmet, and everything. And it, or not the helmet. Helmet was white, I believe, but everything else just looked amazing, and it gelled pretty well. The next question becomes: will we see more of the maroon color scheme on probably the away jerseys? You know, the white with maroon. I think that looks a lot better than the clash of the white and blue that we've seen on away games so far. Maybe they were just waiting to debut them, and maybe we'll see them just a tiny bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely hope so. I mean, that maroon color is just so beautiful, and obviously is part of our color scheme. I feel like more than the blue is. You know, the blue's always kind of been a highlight or like an accent, but it's never been that prominent that you make it an entire piece of your uniform being something like the pants that just stands out in such a rough way.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about the Avalanche, if you're not calling them the Avs, or the Avalanche, it's usually burgundy and blue, not blue and burgundy. So
yeah, exactly.
I think that's something fans need to speak up about. Hey, we want to see those burgundy pants pants and gloves more often than not. Last night's game had some pretty good highlights on both sides of the board. You had Nathan MacKinnon getting 3 points in last night's game. 2 assists and a goal. We'll start with the goal. It came late in the third, but man, oh man, that was classic MacKinnon right there. The coast-to-coast kind of trip, and I don't know if anybody else caught it, but there's a clip out there of Alex Pietrangelo back playing defense, and he sees MacKinnon coming from his own defensive zone, and he utters two words, "Oh boy." And he just starts skating backwards. Pietrangelo came close to getting a stick out with a poke check, but was not to be. And MacKinnon rifle one past Marc-Andre Fleury to put the Avs up 2-1. Give us your thoughts on Nathan MacKinnon's play last night there, Greg.
It was classic MacKinnon. I mean, you know, 100 miles an hour from the defensive end of the ice all the way down into his... Yeah, it's a perfect scoring spot right there, just offside or just outside the faceoff dot, and just, you know, perfect rocket corner, and it was typical Nathan. You know, every time you think of what he's capable of, it comes to plays like that, and especially just to have someone like Alex Pietrangelo, who's one of the premier defensemen in the world. And this guy was highly touted by every single team, tried to be brought on to every single team when everyone found out that he was leaving the Blues. To have someone like him realize what's happening and all he can do is just say, "Oh boy." I mean, that speaks volumes to the skill and the athleticism that Nathan has, that someone like that can just see it and be like, "Oh, well, I'm in trouble here because Nathan has the puck and he's coming with a full head of steam." It was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. It's what you want to see. It's what you expect to see from Nathan again.
For sure, man. I mean, it was a spectacular goal on a tightly contested game throughout most of the night. The Golden Knights scored a couple of goals themselves. One coming from Alec Martinez, who had been in a scoring drought for quite some time for the Vegas Golden Knights, and he scored on a rebound off of Grubauer's pads and just had to have the open net. I originally saw it and thought maybe there was a little bit of interference on the play, but the play continued and they dropped the puck at center ice to continue the game before anything else went on, and then. Late in the third, I believe it was who scored the second goal?
Alex Tuck.
Alex Tuck on an amazing 360 play, you know, and you know it. it unfortunately bounced off of Bowen Byram's, or glanced off Bowen Byram's stick for a quote unquote own goal. To be fair, I did call the game at 5-2, you know, prediction at 5-2 with Bowen Byram scoring a goal. So technicalities aside, I was close. honestly though, it was great seeing everybody on the ice last night. Several key players for the Avalanche were back on the ice, including the opening goal scorer of the game, Samuel Girard, who scored on what just looked like a low wrister shot towards the net, and it just happened to five hole Marc-Andre Fleury. I don't think Fleury had a really good look at that puck as it went in.
Yeah, not really. It kind of came to what you're talking about, the glare and the funky ice. It'll do, you know, just absolute kind of wonders to the puck. But you know, on the unfortunate side for Fleury, it looks like it bounces, but it also kind of stays straight. And it's so hard to pick something up like that, especially again, you know, with that glare coming off the ice. It caught him completely off guard, I feel like.
Yeah. I probably did catch him off guard. I mean, the guy just kind of, you know, didn't look like Fleury got a good grasp on it. And he struggled in that first period when the sun was still out with picking up the puck. I mean, there were a couple times Avs just threw it at the net and he, you know, it hit him and he's like, oh, it's over here. No, wait, it's over there. So it was definitely interesting. But as I was saying, yeah, bunch of faces back for the Avalanche. Sam Girard was better, came off COVID list. Captain Gabriel Landeskog was back on the ice. Tyson Jost was back on the ice. And Matt Calvert was back on the ice after being having a prolonged absence due to what they list as an upper body injury. I've speculated all season that Matt Calvert has had lingering concussion issues going back from previous last season and so on. And hence the reason he wears the pink visor now, or the pink shaded visor when he skates right now. It'll be interesting to see how long he stays, considering it was an outdoor game yesterday, so there's not as many lights around on that rink as there are at Ball Arena or, you know, T-Mobile Arena or wherever else they happen to play. But it was definitely nice to see everybody back on the ice. We almost had Gabriel Landeskog exit the ice once again. He took what looks like a pretty nasty elbow from a Vegas Golden Knights player there early in the first period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of those plays that you look at and you don't really think of it being inadvertently dirty, because it seems like it was meant to be a hard check, but then he stays. You know, the Golden Knight player just kind of stays high and then just throws an elbow out and ends up catching Gabe right in the side of the head. And so, as we were talking about before we started podcast, you know, I can imagine that this is going to be looked at by player safety for sure. I believe that any hit to the head should be looked at by player safety and should be, you know, ruled on one way or the other of being suspensions or fines or what have you. It comes down. I was a hockey referee for USA Hockey for quite a while, and one of the biggest things that influenced the rules and influenced the calls that we had to make is that the onus is always on the player making the hit. It is always on that player to not hit someone in the head, you know, to not throw a dirty hit. And so to see something like this, I'm sure he wasn't thinking, oh, I'm going to drive my elbow straight into Gabe's temple. And I'm sure that wasn't the thought, but it's still on you to make sure that type of stuff doesn't happen, whether it's on purpose or not. So it really needs to come down to, you know, the not so much the intent as much as the result.
Yeah, you know, player safety should definitely take a look at that that hit for sure. Like you said, it's not always the players having the intention of making the hit, and sometimes the adrenaline gets the better of most hockey players or most people in any sport or high adrenaline activity where you're just so focused on one particular thing at a time. But you have to be in control of your actions. as much as possible. You know, the old standby with the NHL is your stick comes up and hits somebody in the face, regardless of it being an accident or not. You're in control of your stick at all times. And, right. You know,
exactly right.
It should be the same thing. And I think that extends to body parts as well. If you're going to play a hit, if you're going to lay a check on somebody, you need to be aware of how far away you are and how many steps you're taking so that you don't get hit with a charging penalty. You got to be aware of where their numbers are so you don't get hit with a boarding penalty or a cross-checking penalty. You have to be aware of where your elbow and your arms and your shoulders are so that you're not leaning into somebody's head. You got to be aware that at least one skate is on the ice when you lay a check on somebody. You don't want to come up off your skates because that's seen as excessive. So, you know, it's more than just skating with the puck and putting the puck into the back of the net for defense and offensive players, you know, because everybody's laying checks. And everybody's, you know, trying, you know, being aggressive and trying to help their team win the game. So I sincerely hope the player safety committee takes a look at this and pulls the Vegas player aside and goes, hey, look, man, we know that wasn't your intention or anything else like that, but we have to at least fine you, maybe a game. You know, it wasn't a horrible hit. There wasn't a call on the ice for a penalty or anything else, but they do need to send a message that this was a high hit. Let's be responsible and pay the fine and serve a one game suspension. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree.
So that leads us to our next topic and something that is kind of irked me with the way the NHL and teams announce player injuries. Talking about Gabriel Landeskog taking a hit to the head, you know, tough guy. Hockey players are super, super tough, so concussion issues are taken very seriously, as they'll want to play through most things. As we've seen with Matt Calvert, he's dealing with some head buzzing or something in past trauma issue with concussions or something. He's been a rough player throughout most of his career, so I wouldn't surprise me if he's had a couple of concussions at least. The continued absence of Eric Johnson for the Colorado Avalanche, with what is listed as an upper body injury. Upper body injury, according to NHL definition, is anything from the waist up. Can be something in the abdomen, something in the chest, the arms, shoulder, elbow, hand, wrist, neck, and even the head. Personally, with the way player safety cracks down on hits to the head and concussion-related issues, I don't understand why they can't list a concussion as a concussion. My point being, I understand the need for them to call it a lower body injury or an upper body injury because they don't want opposing teams targeting those specific areas on players and causing further injury. If you go so far as to protect your players from concussion issues like hits to the head and stuff like that, call it a concussion. Plain and simple. Eric Johnson got checked into the boards in a game in Minnesota, took a nasty fall, lifted up off his skates, and his head made contact with the ice first. Immediately when that happened and he left the game, I'm like, he's not coming back. That's a concussion. That's a huge hit. I've hit my head on the ice at least once, and it is not anywhere near pleasant. So call it a concussion. Don't keep your fans' hopes up with an upper body injury or a lower body injury. Call it what it is, and that way people can realize how serious concussions are. If the NHL wants to be serious about concussions and their aim to prevent them, call a concussion and not an upper body injury. Greg?
Yes, 100% agree with that. You run into the trouble of making it seem less serious than it is. And as we've seen with the NFL, you start to finally make progress when you acknowledge the problem and when you acknowledge the truth. And the issue that you run into when you do something like, oh, we're calling it an upper body injury. And like you said, I can understand the reason for classifications when you don't want a team to think, oh, you know, he's got a bad knee. You know, maybe throw your hits a little bit lower, maybe get a leg out there. You know, these are professionals. I know that there's bad blood. I know some guys don't like each other, nobody's trying to kill each other. You know, no one's trying to do to make career-ending hits. And, you know, to think that, calling a concussion might be putting them at risk, I think is it's just, you know, it's unrealistic, I feel like. And so you have to be truthful about it. You have to get the kind of almost taboo feeling of, you know, oh, these are big, strong, tough guys. They're hockey players. You know, we can't, you know, specify injuries because, you know, it's just we're going to generalize it because, you know, they're big, strong, tough guys. They'll be back, you know, and we know they are. They're hockey players. I mean, it's the fastest sport on earth. It's one of the most dangerous. But be realistic about it. You know, call it a concussion so that we can move forward with that, so that we can have that conversation of how do we prevent this even more, of how do we keep players safe even more, and how do we respond to it when it happens. You know, I'm obviously the doctors, the team, physicians, the medical staff, everybody is doing what's necessary. I mean, they obviously know, but it doesn't help the league. It doesn't help these players when this happens and it gets hidden, because, you know, it doesn't help young kids who are watching this sport think, oh yeah, I need to be this big, strong, tough guy and tough it out, even though I've just had serious brain damage. Yep. It just, you know, it really does lessen the reality of how dangerous these injuries are. And that's not good for the sport. It's not good for the future of the sport. It's not good for the athlete. It's not good for anybody. So yeah, I'm right there with you. Classify a concussion as a concussion. Be real about it so that the conversation can come about and so that real change can happen because of it.
Absolutely. I mean, you hit it on the head with the NFL. They finally opened up and addressed the issue with players like Junior Seau and several others. And, you know, CTE is a real medical diagnosis on, you know, prominently on athletes with, you know, in sports of, you know, physical contact, you know, time and time again, hockey being one of those sports. I agree with you. If the NHL is going to take a step forward in their health and safety of their players, concussions need to be addressed as concussions and not as upper body injuries moving forward. With all that being said, we do wish Eric Johnson the very best in his recovery with what I believe to be a concussion, and know that it's not something that's easily that you can easily come back from, and it is going to take some time. I'm going to move on to an interesting stat in regards to goalie play that we saw last night and we'll continue to see moving forward in the Honda West division overall. Right now, you've got probably two of the hottest goaltenders that played last night in the outdoor game in Philip Grubauer and Marc-Andre Fleury. According to the NHL.com stats webpage, Philip Grubauer is currently third place with a 1.67 goals against average, and right behind him at 1.71, Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, for that game to end in a 3-2 win for the Abs was quite impressive, and I think we should, you know, see that a little bit more. Both goalies have similar save percentages, a 0.936 for Grubauer and a 0.935 for Marc-Andre Fleury, and they both currently have two shutouts on the season. So tick for tack on both goaltenders right there. You got to be impressed with the play that you see out of not only Philip Grubauer, but Marc-Andre Fleury. You know, most of us remember what happened in the playoff bubble last year with Marc-Andre Fleury being pretty much benched in favor of Robbie Leonard, who's currently injured for the Vegas Golden Knights. And, you know, his agent, you know, posting the picture of a sword going through Marc-Andre Fleury, and maybe the time was over in Vegas and it's time to move on. And I believe we touched on that a little bit last episode with Fleury. But the emergence of Philip Grubauer this season has been quite impressive. I mean, last year it was oh, the Avs aren't going to get anywhere with, you know, two backup goaltenders sharing duties and blah, blah, blah between Philip Grubauer, who's been a career backup in his time in Washington where he won a Stanley Cup, and he's, you know, played second fiddle to Semyon Varlamov for a little bit before taking over starting goaltending duties. And then Pavel Francouz, who's started in his career with a couple of different leagues over in Europe, but has never, you know, didn't know if it was going to translate over to the NHL circuit. And he's been given 1 or 2 year extensions by the Avs, I think, three times now. Unfortunately, Pavel Francouz can't speak on his ability this year because he continues to be out with what's listed as a lower body injury. And I'm afraid to say it might be pretty severe, and we may not see him anytime soon. If we don't see him anytime in March, then my guess is we won't see Francouz at all this season. And he might need a season-ending surgery of some sort. I'm going to try and dig some more on that and see if I can find any information. Goaltender injuries are pretty severe when it comes to a lower body injury and you're on a long-term IR. That usually has something to do with a groin muscle, a hip flexor, something within the hip joint itself, the pelvic, you know, pelvic joint itself. Pretty serious issues. Those hips and pelvic joints are not supposed to stretch and bend as much as, you know, goalies make them do. So it's always something to watch out for. With that being said, on those two goaltenders, Fleury and Grubauer, I mean, we've got five games, including tomorrow night's game here at Ball Arena Monday night with the Vegas Golden Knights. And we've had a 1-0 game, we've had a 2-1 game, and we've had two 3-2 wins in that aspect. What do we expect to see out of the next five games between these two teams, Greg?
I feel like it's going to be playoff hockey between these two. And it's already been flashes of that. Aside from, I feel like the first two games were a little ugly, a little, you know, a little rough around the edges as far as, you know, the flow of the game and the way that these two teams were playing. But that's also, I mean, they were dealing with COVID and they were dealing with breaks for a while. So that's to be expected. But I wholeheartedly see now that they've gotten used to each other again, now that they've had their three games in a row against each other and they're about to have their fourth on Tuesday. I definitely foresee playoff hockey. It's going to be rough as far as physicality goes. Yeah, they're going to be hard hits on both sides. I'm sure it's going to be difficult to score as it already has been. it's going to be some really good back and forth. You know, nobody gets to catch a break on either side type hockey, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be fun to watch. I mean, you speak to it. You know, Vegas and Colorado, you know, before the season even started, these were two of the four teams I had predicted in my top four for the division, and, you know, two of the three teams I felt would fight pretty hard for the division crown this year. And currently, my standings are looking pretty accurate. You've got St. Louis sitting in first place, 18 games played with 22 points. Vegas, 15 games played with 21 points. And the Avs are in third place, 14 games played, 19 points. The fourth and fifth, you have the Kings and the Arizona Coyotes tied in points, 17 total, with the Kings holding that fourth position. Minnesota's got 16 points, but of course they've only played 14 games. They're just coming back from their COVID protocol restrictions. And both San Jose and Anaheim are sitting seventh and eighth, you know, in this division, which is kind of right where I had them. I think the surprise team for a lot of us is the LA Kings in their ability to fight and claw in games. And I think that speaks more towards their, again, goaltending. You know, Jonathan Quick and Peterson out there are a strong duo and continue to show why they are not a team to trifle with. Looking at standings throughout the rest of the league, let's check out the Scotia North Division. in Canada. These seven teams are battling it out, and every single night in Canada is like the wild, wild west. You never know what's going to happen or who's going to win, but I tell you what, you're going to see some goals. Toronto is setting a crazy pace, and Austin Matthews, I think, is on a 17-game... 15. Is it 15-game streak? 15
right.
15-game point scoring streak, and I'm telling you, they got Joe Thornton back, and him, Mitch Marner, and Austin Matthews are just tearing things up on that top line for Toronto. Edmonton is right there behind them, hot on their tails, 6 points behind Toronto right now. With 24 points, they have a plus 10 differential. Connor McDavid is being Connor McDavid. He's tearing up that division. He's got 37 points in 20 games with the Edmonton Oilers, which is just ridiculous, and currently leads the NHL. I can't say anything with, you know, in regards to that. He's already made himself a MVP finalist favorite with his point scoring abilities. The dude had 5 more points last night, including, I believe, a hat trick. So,
he's wild, absolutely wild.
It's insane to see. Winnipeg sits in third place in the Scotia North. Montreal Canadiens surprisingly sit fourth ahead of Calgary and Vancouver, both teams which are struggling a little bit, but I think they're starting to get things back in place. And the lowly Ottawa Senators are sitting there at 4-14-1 with a total of 9 points so far this season and only in 19 games played. So they're a little over, they're reaching that halfway point, and it looks like the Ottawa Senators are a lock for that top lottery pick going into the offseason. The surprise in the Discover Central is the Carolina Hurricanes currently sitting atop their league, followed by Florida, Chicago, and Tampa Bay. I'm kind of surprised, Greg, to see the Chicago Blackhawks currently sitting in a playoff division in the Central. I mean, you've got teams like Columbus, Dallas, and Nashville who are struggling. You know, they're not getting the points. Of course, Dallas has only played 12 games.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with you there. There was talks about this offseason. Jonathan Taves was extremely upset at management for not kind of announcing that they were rebuilding, that they were even doing the things they were doing. And it's a captain of your team that you're not really keeping in the loop of, hey, this is the team we're putting around you. And it did not seem like it was going to be a good year for the Blackhawks. It seemed like it was going to be just like last year. It was going to be really rough and not go well for them, and they've been surprising. They've really been able to pull out some big games and some close games too that last year they wouldn't have even had a chance in. So it's been interesting to see. It's nice to see, for the fact that, as we had talked about a couple of shows ago, you know, Nikita Zadorov being there, being a fan favorite here in Colorado, you always want to see former Avs, especially players that were loved by the community to succeed. And so having them do that, and same as Carl Soderberg up in Chicago, it's good to see, in a sense, that there's some former Avs out there that are still doing well, but it's also kind of a pain because I know many like myself are not Blackhawks fans, so you don't necessarily want to see the team do well, but at the same time, it is what it is. They're no longer really division rivals like they were in the past, so it's better to see now for the former Avs that are there than to see a team creeping up in the standings or anything like that against the Avs.
Yeah, absolutely. As you pointed out, both now Chicago, Dallas, and Nashville aren't with us this year in the regular Central Division. They're playing against some teams from the Eastern Conference this year in the realigned divisions. But looking at the Discover Central Division, I think the Chicago also are benefiting from poor play on some playoff caliber teams. I mean, Dallas did have a long stint where they were out due to some COVID issues. Nashville's only got 7 wins. Detroit is another one of those teams. We know Detroit's in a rebuild, and they've only won 5 games. So it's interesting to see. Columbus is struggling a little bit. They've only got 8 wins. They made a big trade with Dubois being not wanting to be there anymore and everything. So they got Laine and Roslovic in return for him, and are hopefully looking to change things up, but they continue to struggle just a little bit. The Mass Mutual East, which is, you know, Mike's division, we call it the bus division. You hop on a bus, you drive to the next town over, you play a team, you hop back on the bus.
That's right.
As expected, your top four teams are Boston, Washington, Philadelphia, and Pittsburgh. You know, pretty standard stuff right there. Nothing really blowing me out of the water. The Islanders and Rangers are sitting fifth and sixth. Islanders are being buoyed by the play of former Avalanche goaltender Semyon Varlamov, who currently leads the league in shutouts with three. New Jersey just announced their new captain, young 22-year-old Nico Hischier, for them. And then the Buffalo Sabres and their acquisition of Taylor Hall are bringing up eighth place in the Mass Mutual East. So congratulations to the Buffalo Sabres and your 1 year contract of Taylor Hall. I believe you overpaid, and welcome to the NHL's reason why Taylor Hall bounces from team to team. And of course, you know, we've already gone over the Honda West with St. Louis leading there. They're 3 points ahead of the Colorado Avalanche, and I don't think we have a game against them for some time. Let's see, the next games against the St. Louis Blues aren't until April 3rd. There's a rescheduled game on the 3rd, and then a rescheduled game on April 14th. So we got a ways to go before we see the Blues again, and hopefully they're a little banged up, a little tired before they get to us. Looking forward into the season, or into the next week, there's not much going on. The Avalanche have a game, like we said, tomorrow night, February 22nd, against the Vegas Golden Knights as they visit Denver for the first time this season. Last night was technically a home game for the Colorado Avalanche, as they were listed as the home team. But starting 7 p.m. tomorrow night, and then Wednesday night, February 24th, we have a rescheduled game against the Minnesota Wild, followed by a back-to-back series in Arizona, 7 p.m. start times there as well, Friday and Saturday night against the Arizona Coyotes, the first of two games against the Coyotes. What do we expect to see this week as far as Avalanche hockey there, Greg?
You know, I got to say, against the Golden Knights, I think it'll be some playoff hockey. It'll be good back and forth. I don't think it'll be very high scoring, just like it's been all series long. The Wild, I feel like there's going to be a little bit of probably some anger, animosity for what happened earlier in the season. So I can see that game getting pretty rough. You know, like two games into that series, it was already getting rough. There were, you know, some fights and some late pushing and shoving after the whistle. I could see that one getting to be pretty rough. And I'm actually really excited to see these the Coyotes. They they were our first taste of a playoff series last year, and you know, we handled them really well. But man, they seem to be doing better this season. So it'll be interesting to see what they kind of bring to the table. I know Darcy Kemper has been, you know, one of the better goaltenders in the league for a hot minute. You know, I'll never forgive him for what he did in 2014 against the Avs as a member of the Wild. So it's always a bit of a love-hate moment going up against Darcy Kemper, because I love great hockey. I love great players. I love great goaltenders. So it's always fun to see, you know, high-level players playing at high levels, but man, it's rough to see them play high levels against the Avs sometimes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I have to agree with you. Tomorrow night's game, I think, is going to be more of the same. The Vegas Golden Knights have scored a total of 5 goals in these past three games we played against them. And before that, they've been struggling to get the puck into the back of the net as a team. Yeah. So take advantage of that while you can, while they're still trying to heat up. Let's hope they don't heat up tomorrow night. Let's hope it's more of the same and they struggle a little bit, especially if Philip Grubauer is going to be back in the net. The game on Wednesday night against the Minnesota Wild, you hit it right on the head. This is a there's a lot of animosity between these two teams. You know, their history within the Central Division and everything. There's a huge rivalry right there. I expect more of the same. I expect this to be a high paced, high hitting, you know, high hits and total shots and everything from both sides. I think whichever team puts, you know, puts the puck towards the net a little bit more is going to win this game. Whichever team can stay out of the penalty box is going to win that game. That's a big thing. And that's a big issue the Avalanche have right now is getting their power play back up and running and getting hot again. Like, it's gone cold for the last 5-6 games. We have not been able to get a power play goal. And last night was probably the best opportunity they had on a minute and almost a minute 30 or so on a 5-on-3 and just weren't able to put the puck in the back of the net. The Arizona series, two games coming up. As you said, we haven't seen these guys since the playoffs, where we took them 4-1. I think there's a bad taste in the mouth for a lot of these Coyotes players. They want to come out and say, hey, we're not your whooping boy. You know, we're going to fight. They're currently sitting 5th in the division. So they're gonna give it their all. And I would highly recommend that the Avalanche do not take them lightly. There's been reports that the Arizona Coyotes are still dealing with some front office issues and some issues going on there, but I don't think the players care about what's going on in the front office as long as they're getting paid. I think that was part of the reason why Taylor Hall left the Arizona organization, was there was some issues with bonuses and monies due and everything else like that. So any chances of Arizona holding on to players, I think Carl Soderberg was down there for a period of time too, and that's why he's in Chicago now. So hopefully, I don't wish any organization any issues with their front office, but you know, and hope that they can figure it out so that they can put a quality team on the ice, because nothing's better than a competitive team to face off against, and it only makes the Avalanche much better.
Absolutely.
Final news of the day before we get off here. We are 52 minutes into this podcast. Last little bit of information is an announcement from In the Crease podcast. We are looking at going live, doing our live stream. We will be streaming through the Rocky Mountain Sports Report StreamYard setup, similar to what our counterparts with 4th and 99 do. If you get a chance to listen to 4th and 99, they go live with their rebrand on Wednesday night. So give them a listen. That's Matt Staffiero and David Slade coming at you guys, bringing you all the Broncos information. And if you didn't get them today, get them next week, next Saturday morning. The boys with the Nuggets group, as they do their weekly report for all things Denver Nuggets. In the Crease, we'll be doing our first live stream broadcast, hopefully this Saturday, February 27th at 7:30 p.m. We will have the Arizona Coyotes game, or I will at least have the Arizona Coyotes game up and running while we do our live stream. We'll post the link to our live stream on Facebook. We'll be streaming both Facebook and YouTube. You can access those afterwards, and we'll also be continuing the podcast and putting our live stream show on the audio on the podcast and continue to release podcasts to you guys Tuesday afternoons if you didn't catch us live. Greg, how do you feel about this live stream coming up? You ready for it? You got some good stuff coming our way?
Oh, I'm so excited. It's right up my alley. It's I stream on Twitch. I'm not going to make a shameless plug here, but it's something that I love to do. It's something that I'm getting to combine the two of streaming and talking Avalanche. I'm so excited. This is going to be great.
It's definitely going to be a fun time. We will do our best to try and provide you guys with as much Avalanche content as possible with the live stream. Of course, the issue with live streaming for most platforms is getting permissions from the NHL and the Colorado Avalanche so that we can bring you guys actual footage and stuff like that. We have to get permissions. I mean, we can pirate that stuff, but don't want to deal with any potential lawyers issues or anything else like that. So we are working on getting all that stuff set up straight away. So we're going to be in touch with Kroenke Sports Entertainment and the Colorado Avalanche just to get their permissions to use game shot footage and permissions of the NHL so we can bring you guys some videos, some special content, stuff like that. And of course, we are always pushing for you guys to interact with us. It's hard to do on a podcast because you guys comment to us afterwards or heading into future episodes. With the live stream, you guys can comment right on the platform as long as you provide permissions to StreamYard off the Facebook link. We can call your name out. We can thank you for your opinion. We can get your comments on anything we're talking about and that kind of stuff moving forward. As always, it's always great doing this show for you guys. I look forward to it each and every week, talking all things Avalanche and NHL related. It truly is where my heart resides. And as Greg can account, I you know, from a fantasy standpoint, I kind of know what I'm doing. Dude, I can't believe I've got that much of a lead in my fantasy league right now. It's kind of ridiculous.
That is nuts. That's absolutely nuts.
And to be honest, it's only my third time running an NHL fantasy team. I've always found it kind of tedious. Same with baseball, fantasy baseball. You know, having to reset a lineup every single day. I just try to make a habit of it now. To, you know, after the games are done each night, I go forward and I look at everything, hit the trade that, you know, the trades and everything else like that, and put it together. I did check with the rest of my league, and I think I'm gonna finish this week with the highest point total, which is something I've never done before, so it's kind of entertaining. But I also think I'm gonna have the biggest spread between my point total and my opponent's point total. But I think this league has fallen victim to the, oh, it's so tedious, I don't want to do it anymore, and people just stop participating. So I'll take it for what it is. Anyway, folks, that is going to do it for our show this afternoon. Big Hirsch will hopefully join us next week as we do our first live stream. And hopefully we can start working on getting some special guests lined up. Who knows, maybe even the random player or former player spotlight. If anybody are season ticket holders, you have questions for in regards to if you'll be able to attend games or things from your ticket reps and haven't been able to get a hold of them, please give us a comment on there. I can reach out to my former ticket rep and see if I can get some information for you guys, or at least get her on to answer any of your questions. And we'll go from there. Again, tomorrow night, Vegas Golden Knights, Colorado Avalanche at Ball Arena, 7 p.m. Tune into the game as best you can. I understand altitude is still having its issues with the networks and everything, so do what you can. I use sportsearch.net. I'm not sure what you use, Greg, but sportsearch.net is always a great source for watching games. It's a streaming option that somebody else puts out there. You click on the hockey link, find the teams you want to watch, click on that link, and then I use the Stream East or one of the other ones. Just find what you can and make it work, because ain't nothing better than watching hockey these days.
That's right.
Alrighty, Greg. I'm going to wrap it up. Any last words?
Go Avs, go.
Go Avs, go indeed. Guys, we are 3 points away from first place. 2 points behind the Vegas Golden Knights. We win tomorrow night and we jump into second place. That's going to do it for the show, guys. As always, thanks for listening to us. And we will see you guys same time next week as we go live. That's it for us at In the Crease Podcast. We'll see you guys next week.